think this might be a good opportunity and moment to say a few things in regard to communication, and perhaps particularly in regard to communicators who, for various reasons, find it extremely difficult to give what perhaps in your world would be considered adequate evidence of their personality, or perhaps not so much their personality, but nevertheless sufficient evidence to substantiate the claim that they are whom they claim to be. You see, I'm fully aware that you are at times placed, not exactly in a dilemma, but in an awkward position, because people were bound to say, how do you know that this person is the person that they claim to be? Now, there are many reasons, of course, and possibly the chief reason for it being difficult to prove identity is the fact that if a well-known personality does come and make contact with you, what evidence can that person supply that would be sufficient for the average person, or even the person who is perhaps already a spiritualist, to accept a well-known personality? So much has been written about the person in question, so much data is available concerning their birth and their life and their death, and so much evidence that might be forthcoming would not be perhaps acceptable in certain quarters or to some people. Indeed, it becomes increasingly difficult for a well-known person to give anything that could really be accepted as evidence, unless, of course, certain things or facts were given that were unknown to the general public, which could be confirmed through some source of relationship or close friendship with someone still on earth. But the vast majority of famous people, of course, that communicate have been here for many years, some of them perhaps several centuries, and there is really no way in which one can prove the identity. Indeed, one might say that to some extent a great deal has to be accepted on faith, by faith. And I think what one should try to remember is the important factor from our point of view is not the person, the name, or even in a sense the personality, but the message, what is said. And of course, I know that it is natural that you should want, if possible, to make contact with certain well-known personalities, people who can perhaps by their name command some hearing, and also, of course, if the personality of that individual is sufficiently strong enough when it comes over, you do have a personality which is very different perhaps from most people whose names are household words, most people whose names are so well known. Invariably, of course, they are people of strong personality and strong character. And naturally, they are men and women of intellect, and men and women who have been most careful in what they have to say. Very seldom do they talk to realities, whereas Mrs. Brown, or perhaps one's aunt or one's relation, who, of course, is in a better position to give personal evidence, because you know the person concerned, you know the circumstances, and you know often the things that they say are evidential. And often, of course, one is inclined to accept them much more readily because of that, but usually the gist of their conversation is very basic, very material, very much concerned with material things, and it has very little bearing or very little interest on the things of the mind and of the spirit, which the personality who exerts himself or herself to communicate who has progressed on this side, as indeed most of them have, who were when on earth well-known people. I mean, if you take someone like Disraeli, or you take someone like Queen Victoria, or you take some famous personality who was a great writer and a great thinker, naturally you'd expect those people to come and to tell you things of genuine interest, and in such a way that it would be, for most people who listen, a great inspiration and a great hope. But of course we must always come up against this business of identity, proof of identity. And this becomes increasingly difficult for a well-known personality, a well-known person. And I can't for the life of me see what one can do about it. Of course, some people say, well, why do they bother to give their names? It doesn't really matter, this is what they say, and of course we agree with that. But we know that even so, living in a material world such as yours, that often, even if a person may not be able to accept the identity of the person, if the context of the message is such that it holds one's attention and gives one something very real to think about, something that is valuable, and if the conversation is such that it inspires the individuals who listen to want to know more about this subject, in other words, if it does good, then of course it is more than worthwhile. And therefore we do allow certain entities and souls to come to you, knowing full well the proof of their identity is very remote. It's going to be very difficult to prove from the material point of view. But what we are concerned with is not so much, in a sense, the personality. In fact, the individual concerned may not care two pennies whether you accept them as their person or not. Indeed, quite often they prefer not to give their name. But because we know that the curiosity value, apart from anything else, of individuals on your side, that they're prepared often to listen to someone who claims to be a certain personality. In other words, you see, it does open a door which might sometimes be shut. It does do a great deal of good, even if they don't accept the, or cannot understand or accept the individual, or not sure if it is that individual. If the message carries with the personality, for instance, also, and the context of the message is such that it makes the individuals concerned who listen seriously interested and want to find out more, then of course we are not wasting time, we're doing a good job.
Yeah.
But it must be very distressing at times when you, who have such faith, sometimes come up against this complex situation when people say to you afterwards, oh yes, it's very interesting, but how do you know it was that and so? It doesn't say any evidence to support it. Then again, for instance, supposing Disraeli again. Now I ask you, what possible evidence could the man give to prove his identity? I know you can say, oh yes, well, he'd sound like a statesman, and one would expect him to have a very fine speaking voice and carry a great deal of weight and so on. But that isn't sufficient evidence, the average materialistically minded person. But you cannot prove, really, as I see it, for instance, the reality of the fact that it might be would be Disraeli, because there's really nothing that you could go on. He might tell you a lot of things about his personal life, his material life, but all this, of course, could be taken from books or could be checked up through books and so on and so on. So, it is a big problem in that sense. But then again, because a person was famous on earth, there's no reason why they should not be allowed to come back and communicate. You see, there are some people who say, oh, well, we don't want to communicate with people like that unless we can prove their identity. But I'm afraid there are some things, even in this great truth, that you must take on faith. If I think the main thing is this, and I think people should accept this as a real answer to this problem, that if a medium that has been used for many years and has provided over that period of time innumerable tests in regard to communication from various relations of people who've been able to verify and definitely be assured that these things are factual. In other words, there is no reason to think that there should be impersonation, or that there should be individuals coming through claiming to be what they are not. The point is that if a medium's mediumship has over a long period of time been substantiated, possibly by thousands of people in regard to their own personal communication, there's no reason to doubt when someone comes whose name is so well known, whose personality is a personality that in itself is distinct and quite individual. There's no reason to doubt that that person is that person. If they cannot supply personal evidence, even if they were to try to do so, which would not necessarily be evidence to the majority of people, because so much has been written about the persons and so. The point is that there's no reason to think that the person is not that person.
That's a point we usually put over. Is it Dr. Marshall speaking?
No.
Oh, who is speaking, please?
My name is Lodge.
Oliver Lodge,
yes.
Oliver Lodge.
I've always been interested, as you well know, in this tremendous subject. I've been particularly latterly interested in this particular medium because I realize the tremendous value of it. And I have from time to time, not often, but from time to time have come, not often spoken, but I've been present. And I've listened with great interest to what has been said. I realize only too well, from the scientific aspect, of course, particularly, that this subject, this great truth we call spiritualism communication, will never be fully accepted in your world until we are successful in achieving a method of communication which is purely scientific. That is, I suppose, when the medium is not used at all. Well, this is all very debatable. Whether a man will ever succeed in finding a truly scientific way of communication with our world, in cooperation with our world, I would not like to say at this stage, because I cannot help but feel that whatever method is yours, no matter how successful it may prove to be, even assuming that the vast majority of people were convinced by it, still somewhere you obviously must have mind. You can never cut out, you'll never be able to delete the obvious link of communication, which must always come back to the mind, the mentality, the thought forces that must emanate, as they do, from our world to yours. Even assuming that you manifest the reality of spirit through what is termed a scientifically accepted instrument. In other words, if man, a scientist, or a group of scientists, indeed were trying to help some, even if they build the machine, which they will consider to be foolproof, knowing as I do the whole set of circumstances of communication, even assuming that you have this mechanical contrivance or device and that will bring forth into your world the thought force and mentality, personality and voice of the manifesting spirit, I am quite convinced that certain scientists, particularly, or those of scientific mind, even though they have created the machine, will still have their doubts. I do not feel myself that it will ever be possible to create a scientific instrument that will be completely and absolutely successful on a purely scientific basis, because somewhere, obviously, you must have the mentality of individuals, you must have the thought forces. These conditions which so many scientists would apply to mediumship in your world cannot, in my opinion, prove successful from the point of view of our making communication. I mean, in the old days, of course, it was a common practice to rope the medium in the chair and so on, and we won't go into all that, but you know the sort of things that happened, which proved reality of spirit communication to some, far from proving it to all. And indeed, when results were obtained under what were considered strictest conditions, there were always those who differed, and always those who said, well, it could have been trickery, it could have been done in this way or that way. They'd always bring out some sort of hypothesis of something that was achieved by methods which were not honest. Now, of course, in your world you have infrared telescopes that can see what is transpiring in the dark, infrared photography. You have all manner of scientific and electrical devices. Some might be which have been used on this medium, but it still does not satisfy. I know myself as a scientist. I know my own breed. I know my own peoples. There are certain mentalities and certain individuals who, because of the very fact of their scientific knowledge and experience, and because of other reasons for which it is perhaps best to say nothing, will not be prepared to come out wholeheartedly, even when the evidence is so strong, will not come out wholeheartedly on the side of spiritual communication and psychical research. Really, in a sense, I think one might truthfully say that you cannot completely and wholly find conviction of this truth on purely scientific material grounds, because this, after all, is a thing of the mind and of the spirit. This is the reality of man. This is the true man. It is the true power of the spirit of man. It is something away and beyond material things, no matter how far science evolves, even assuming that he, as he no doubt will, reach the moon or other planets, even if they land on the planets or certain planets, even though they set up stations, they were still, strangely enough, no matter how much man progresses in space, no matter how much he learns about the power of thought and the transmission of thought, I still think for many people there will be doubts and uncertainties about the life that is to come. I may sound a bit pessimistic.
No.
And yet at the same time, I think it is right to say, although there will be great scientific advancement in regard to this subject and communication, and it will perhaps to some extent be accepted scientifically by certain scientists and groups of individuals of like mind, there will still be, for various very good reasons, I say very good, not good from our point of view, but good from the point of view of certain individuals on your side, who, though they may profess to be looking at things from a spiritual attitude of mind, who will have material reasons deep down within them for wanting to reject, who will stand out firm against this as long as they possibly can, because they will not want their deep-rooted convictions and ideas and ideals and opinions and all that that means in a material sense to them, they won't want that altered. They won't want the change. You see, there are in your world, as you well know, some very, very powerful organizations, well-meaning but dull, and afeard of advancement, spiritual truth, and its true advancement in regard to humanity. They would like to think, and perhaps in themselves some of them are very sincere, would like to think that their minds are open to receive, but they're not. I regret to say. And this applies not just to scientists, but it applies to many people who are blinded and prejudiced by their religious convictions. And I think, and I maintain this, that our biggest problem is not going to be so much with the scientists, who do approach, whatever one may feel about them individually or collectively, do approach things as best they can with an open mind. They very seldom have very strong preconceived ideas. They may have certain theories which they will naturally work upon. And they may sometimes, indeed they quite often do, in regard to this truth anyway, they look for the black side rather than for the better. They're much more concerned to find out the trickeries. And of course, in a sense, they're quite well justified. But I'm more concerned with the power of religious organizations and bodies who have always been fundamentally the enemy of any true spiritual advancement. Anything that goes against them or their ideas, their strong ideas and opinions formulated over a long period of history, whenever there has been anything that would in any way interfere or stand in their way or cause people to doubt what they think and what they believe, or indeed anything that was, as they saw it, in opposition, they would of course come out in force against it. Fortunately, the days of the torture chamber and the days of the Inquisition are over. But there are many ways in which a powerful religious organization can suppress. And of course they still do. And it is a terrible thing to think that man, in his ignorance of truth, does everything in his power to suppress truth. Mm-hmm. It isn't only in the Christian church, of course. You can find it in other religions, other groups. When there are great banded together organizations, they are very powerful. And though they profess to be spiritually strong and powerful, unfortunately they are often much more materially powerful, materially strong. That is the idiosyncrasy of the whole business. That a strong, so-called spiritually bonded groups and organizations of religious persuasion are quite often much more materially bonded together and materially powerful, either or in fact in financial aspect as well as in numbers and in power, in a material sense, in such a way that they can and they do suppress truth. Although I must say that since my death there has been a great advancement. There has been a lot of doors, have been a lot of doors opened. And I think that there is a greater acceptance of this truth by the general public. I think there's a greater awareness, greater curiosity, a greater desire to know. And I think that we shall, indeed I know that we shall make tremendous progress. And I am convinced that there will be scientific methods discovered gradually of communication. I think that we are on the threshold of great discoveries. But I still say, and I still maintain, that no matter how scientific the approach and the success of the experiment or experiments, there will always be doubting Thomases, and there will always be, of course, the realization that you can never completely do without a form of mediumship. I think the human element must always play a part, because we are dealing with human beings who long since have left your world, who fundamentally are of the mind and of the spirit, and therefore you cannot obliterate in communication the mind and the power of the spirit. For after all communication is of a spiritual nature, inasmuch that they are spiritual beings that are trying to communicate with you, and that whatever method they may use or apply, it is a mental process that must obviously be yours. I want to speak to you, I must think of the things I wish to say. In this instance, the voice box that is constructed from the ectoplasmic substance drawn chiefly from the medium that is built up into this room, which makes it possible for me to transmit my thoughts via that to you, coming to you as sound vibrating the atmosphere, but fundamentally it is and must be the mentality, the thought force emanating from the individual, in this case myself, from this side. And of course you must remember that there's a whole group of bodies, souls, and quite often working together as they do in a band, all supporting the one person who's making the communication at that moment, in that moment of time to you. There must be at times difficulties, and there must be at times occasions when the transmission in thought force coming to your sound is a little perhaps muddled or sometimes incoherent. There are many complications in communication, and people should realize this. The success that we achieve, I sometimes think, is remarkable. And how much more we shall hope to do, we want to do so much more. But we realize that we have many, many obstacles to overcome yet. I know there will always be people that will say, oh, I don't accept that, no matter how marvelous the communication.
It really boils down to the fact that, as you said, there must be a mind for communication, and you cannot harness a mind for a material instrument, doesn't it?
Fundamentally, yes. I mean, of course, there are many, for instance, in your world today, things like you take your tape recorder.
Yeah.
I mean, this is fantastic that a voice of an individual can be placed on that tape and it can be played back and everyone can hear it identically to what it was at the time of it being recorded. But then again, you know that that is not the person speaking.
Yeah.
You see, what I'm trying to convey here is that you could put that tape recorder in a room, in the dark, without anyone else knowing about it, switch it on, and people in the next room, or even the people in that room, say, oh, I can hear voices speaking in there. That sounds like so-and-so. And they recognize the voice, and the only thing is that you can't answer questions. I mean, that tape will only play back identically what has been reproduced on it. It won't answer any question that you may ask of it.
There's no mind there.
There's no mind there. You see, what I want to convey is that we are transmitting thoughts. But behind the thoughts is the mind of the individual and the personality and the characteristic of that individual, all merging through, as best we can put it through, into your world, vibrating your atmosphere, recreating artificially, and I think one must always remember this, it is artificially recreation of our personality and our thoughts. And I don't suppose that we shall ever successfully convince every individual, but we shall, and I think the evidence is so overwhelming, we shall convince the majority of clear-minded thinking people who are seeking on the right level of thought, if they are seeking for spiritual truth, if they are anxious for the reality of the power of the Holy Spirit, that will come to them. It will be brought to them. They will be made conscious and aware of it. They will receive that personal evidence that will substantiate the claims that we make. But there will always be and must be the human element. And when we realize the complexities of communication, we realize the human element being as it is human, there will be failure. There will be times when we are not successful, when we are not able to convince, when people, for various reasons on both sides, cannot become en rapport together. You see, communication, if it is to be successful, must be a combination of like mind. It must be a combination of sincerity of purpose among the peoples concerned, we on this side and you on yours. It must be, as it were, a complete coordination. It must be something that is desired, something that is wanted, in the highest possible sense by all the individuals that are working towards that end. In other words, it is an experiment in which all concerned play a part. We on this side, the medium that is used, and the people who, like yourselves, term the sitters. When there is a complete cooperative effort under the conditions as best they can be ideal, then we more or less are assured of success. But you must remember that the vast majority of people who make communication or endeavor communication, particularly coming from your side, are quite often, without perhaps fully realizing it, building barriers, making it much more difficult, much more complex than it should be. We don't ask for people to come to accept everything that we may give them as gospel truth. Of course, we do say that which is true and sincere from within ourselves. We do not come and tell you a pack of nonsense, but at the same time, it is important for the individuals to realize that are endeavoring to find truth, that not only must they come with an open, clear mind, ready to receive truth, we do not ask them to put behind them their own common sense, although there again, what is common sense? Common sense doesn't necessarily in a sense apply to something like this, because the average person's common sense, purely materialistic as it must be on a material plane, cannot necessarily grasp this which is far beyond the common. We want people to enter into this truth, seeking truth with an open mind and an open heart, cooperating as best they can to the best of their ability, making it possible for us to link with them in the right way, a way in which we know we can achieve success. But we don't ask you to be nincompoops and accept everything as gospel. We expect you to use that common sense that you have. But if you receive something that does not make sense or does not seem at the moment to be acceptable, we don't necessarily think that you should discard it. We should say, put it in reserve. It may be that at some later date, that which makes no sense at the moment may become a real thing to you in the future. In other words, we only ask that all those who are working towards this end, to find truth and to know truth and to understand truth, shall in themselves be truthful, shall in themselves be honest, shall in themselves be open-minded and open-hearted, and that they shall have only that which is good at heart. And knowing our complication and difficulty of communication, will make those alliances which are necessary under these often difficult conditions that we must function in. We do our best. We only ask for those in your world who will be as cooperative as they possibly can. But we do not ask you in that being cooperative that you should cast away your common sense, but at the same time realize that this is not necessarily an easy thing always to prove, particularly in certain instances and under certain circumstances. It is our task to prove identity. It is our task to prove survival. But it is your task, having discovered it and found its reality, to put it into practice in your daily lives and to spread this truth wherever you go, because your world is in such need of this, that more now than it's ever needed in the past. We all send our blessings to you. I know the good work that you do. I wish you well.
Sir Elder Lodge, could you hold on just a minute?
I don't think I can.
If you've met Sir William Crook.
Oh, yes, of course. Oh, my old friends and associates and many others, I must go. Goodbye.
Thank you so much,
God bless you both.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.